the most plagiarized man in show business, in the music business, Scott Joplin, with Pineapple Rag. This was published in 1908. And as you know, you're familiar with the music associated with, what's that movie? It will come to me in a minute. But Scott Joplin not only pioneered this kind of music, but he pioneered any number of ways in which it should be played, pioneering the actual execution of the music. And to this day, you see a lot of things that came out of his music, and without much attribution, really. And I was listening to it yesterday, and I said, "Oh, we have to play a little bit of, Joplin today." This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and lots to talk about, really. First up on my agenda, it appears that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been indicted on a number of charges, to which, of course, he has said he is completely innocent of. And we will see, because the investigation is starting with him and it's going to grow. So he's charged with corruption, collusion, all the kinds of things that we hear when these charges at this level occur. So we'll see what more charges before the end of the day join those already in play, but that's the news out of Israel. You've more than likely, of course you have, stayed up to watch a Democratic debate. I call it a show and tell. It's not for me. None of these things that they have organized as debates for me even remotely resemble what a debate ought to be about. Well, we had, 10 candidates vying for the people's attention. And this was the fifth Democratic debate. It was aired nationally from the Tyler Perry Studios in Atlanta. The thing was that there were no substantive changes to the content or format to this thing that they do every 4 years now. So I thought I would bring to your attention things that struck me. I know that there are people who were just riveted. Oh, they're watching a debate. This is not a debate, and I defy anybody to prove to me that this is a debate. This format they followed last night. What about it made it a debate? We didn't have people squaring off with each other. We had a panel of journalists asking questions. So it was a more of a Q&A kind of thing. There were, on one side, you had the questioners, and you had on the other side those being questioned. Well, the one good thing that they did do was to cut the length of this torture session from 3 hours to 2 hours, for which I'm very grateful, because it means I didn't have to fight sleep so violently fight the urge to sleep. Because it you wonder, is there anybody who is actually the coordinator or a group of people who coordinate these debates? Because they're getting more and more pathetic, more and more annoying. I am of the annoyed group. You know, it's really silly. You have 10 people, and no one still could explain how come you're running a debate with 10 people who are expected to dispatch their adversaries in 2 hours while giving the people watching this wretched thing the impression that they're looking at something historic. No, no, on all counts, no. No such thing. You're having a debate. If you don't have, or you don't have the capacity to have strong exchanges between and among the candidates, and someone expertly managing the traffic, then don't have a debate. Just say you're having a question and answer session with the Democratic candidates and leave it at that. But when you tell people you're having a debate, it appears that nobody knows what a debate is. You can't have 10 people in a debate. Okay, if maybe you want to pioneer this new mode of political activity. But still, you have to have someone who knows how to manage the traffic, which sadly, no one knew how to manage the traffic. You're having a debate. Okay. But time is of the essence. And people now have to kind of hurry up because everybody wants to get in on the response. After all, they're getting free time, a nationwide audience. Whether they have something good or not so good to say, the fact is they have the opportunity to be in your face. They have the opportunity for you to see them. They have the opportunity to say things, whether they make sense or not. And I am just so upset with this Democratic Party that keeps treating mediocrity as if it were gold. It wasn't explained to the audience that people will have next to no time to appreciate both the question and the answer. They have to move. This is a fast-moving train. I have questions about that. I don't think that's fair to the candidates. And it's not fair either to the viewers. Speaking of which, this business of having a panel of journalists doing the questioning, I'm not comfortable with that. Because their questions are not truly independent of the organizations that they work for. They are performing first and foremost for their employers so that the employers would say when they get back to the office, oh, you did us fine, you did us well. But that's not the point, is it? What you need, I should say, are people who know the issues, people who are conversant with the issues, You don't pick a pack of people already compromised by virtue of their affiliation. You might have noticed, for example, that the questioners come from mainstream media. That should trouble us all. No independent, you can't find an independent voice anywhere that could ask a question without being fettered by the paper or the TV station they work for. So they're not journalistically independent. And that bothers me. And it goes on every time we have one of these, see and tell kind of thing, calling the issue a debate. That's not a debate. We see all the tentacles that tie and bind these journalists to the news organizations they work for. And may I point out, we saw from Atlanta, we didn't see a good representation of journalists of color. And when they do have one, it is so clear, okay, Fred, you got to go in there, you got to represent black people. That shouldn't be the case. So the planning was very poor and very typical, because the last thing they want, and they always associate trouble with bright journalists of color who invariably would ask questions that hit in the gut. And they don't want that. Prior to all of this going on, there had to have been meetings where they iron out the so-called rules. There should be no such thing. They long ago gave up on the idea that journalists, in a very important way, are guardians of our democracy. Yes, we know. We have the advent of just reckless journalism. They're so pathetically devoted to this side or to that side or to this belief or to that system that they are incapable of doing a good job. But good journalists could be found. And you mean to tell me in Atlanta, Georgia, you can't find journalists of color to participate in this and bring a certain dimension to these discussions? I fault the Democratic Party for that also. I can't understand why we repeat these things and the offending parties get away with it, and it's more like a showcase for their stars. Who cares whether you think you're a star or not? We will know by your questions. You're asking crappy questions, you're a crappy star. You're not needed in that venue. So I'm laying out for you how I interpret these events. I'm not even at the event itself. I'm just telling you how it is shaped. The forces that are shaping this. They took great pride to say, well, Tyler Perry's studios are hosting the location where this so-called debate is being held. And I get it. That's the way they want to show that they're cognizant that they are in a predominantly black city. And Tyler Perry is on his way up now. He is owning a studio, and it's a wonderful thing to say that you have a natural pairing. He's now a businessman. He's not a filmmaker. He's not an actor anymore. He is in the communications realm, and in a big way. So that was a good thing to give a nod to that. Well, when you are having a debate, you kind of give people the lay of the landscape, but it can't be the same kind of people who are asking the questions. Of all the people you could reach out to at nearby universities and to put things in context and prepare the audience for the event itself, and you don't do it. And this is the fifth show and tell. The fifth one. So by my standards, you're not novices at this anymore. You know how to do it. And this, if this is what you know how to do, I could live without it. And I did. I signed out well within the program. I said, I had enough of this garbage. I just can't take any more of it. You have a situation, and this is very puzzling to me, so I thought I would share it with you. One of the candidates that very night quit the campaign. He made a big elaborate statement that he is getting out of the presidential race. And that person was Wayne Messam of Miramar, Florida. He's in just of Miramar, Florida, which is a small-sized city, but, you know, compared to other cities in Florida, it can hold its own. It's an enclave, mostly of Caribbean background. It is solvent. It is considered a very nice place to live. In fact, that's why many Jamaicans and other Caribbean people go to Miramar to live. It comes close to resembling the lifestyle of many so-called middle-class Caribbean people. Wayne Messam is the mayor of Miramar. Everybody says he's a nice guy. He was a professional football player. People seem to like him a lot. But that's not my problem. That's not what I'm complaining about. I'm asking the question, how the heck did he get there in the midst of a show and tell? How did he get there? How did he qualify for that? Who qualified him as good to participate equally in the show and tell called a debate? Reason I ask this question is he didn't qualify on any count previously to join anything they're calling a debate. Did he raise the requisite amount of money? No. Did he even file the papers that are important to file? No. But there he was. He was a candidate last night. Even though right after the event, he announced, I am out of here. And so he should be. he did not qualify to be even on the stage. So I have to ask, what is the Democratic Party doing? How is it so loose with its qualifications for candidates? He did not qualify to be there. He's a nice guy and all that, you know, people say. But he did not qualify to be on that stage, plain and simple. So now that poses a whole bunch of other ideas. What was this, a lark? This was supposed to be funny? Who authorized his participation in the debate? Who did? And hear what happens after he announces his withdrawal. He is withdrawing from the contest, when in fact he shouldn't even have been in it. Here's a good example as to why. With his withdrawal, and technically he can come back again. He has withdrawn. So he could come back and go try and fight for the nomination again. How much money do you think he has in his coffers to finance another run right now? Hold your breath. He has $5. You see, this kind of stuff makes me go crazy. You couldn't possibly be serious. You couldn't possibly be a valid candidate, an authentic candidate with $5 left in your campaign account. You're joking. And this is a mayor. It didn't appear to be an issue yesterday. But it was just announced today in the local papers and other media outlets that he is suspending. He is suspending a campaign he never had. He's suspending it. Because he finally has come to see that his campaign, such as it has been, is really not driving him to his goal. This is insanity. So that's how I looked at this, as a travesty, wasting people's time. You either can or can't afford to run. If you can't afford to run, get out or don't get in. Don't insult people's intelligence this way. And I blame squarely the Democratic Party for that. It means that nobody vetted anybody participating in this Q&A session. Is that what you think Democratic voters deserve? Is this casual way of operating? Is this what Democratic voters deserve? Your people are joking. And that's why I severed ties with you. if you're serious about politics, if you're serious about creating a new change, this can't possibly be acceptable as the way you run your railroad. I don't want a party that operates this way, or that has people thinking that this is okay, and this is my effort to run for office under your umbrella. You're insulting the people who are serious about this. So this dog and pony show that they put on, you still managed to see some serious candidates, but a party incapable of doing its job, of running a very tight ship and addressing people's needs, primary among them, the need to know what is the vision of the Democratic Party, where is it going, what does it want to accomplish, what are its long-term and short-term concerns. That does not come across. The party does not come across as respecting people. It comes across as a laissez-faire, well, you know, whatever, you know us, just vote for us and we'd be all right. I'm not all right with it. I'm out. I am out of it. You will have to change dramatically your orientation if you're going to get my attention. Because you are ignoring things and minimizing their value in the way you behave. When I turn on my TV, actually I watched it on my phone, and I take the time out from my life to hear what it is that you have planned, where it is you are going, what you wish to achieve. And you're soliciting like crazy. I need your help. I need, you know, to win. You have a candidate, Kamala Harris, who's running, who has no plan. And you can see literally her campaign falling apart. It started falling apart months ago. Is there nobody in the party who can sit with candidates and consult with them in order to help them where it is they want to go, where how to shape their campaign, to give them a little assistance? No. But she's falling apart, and she's not the only one. And I'll tell you this, the Republicans are not so lackadaisical. They have reasons for being very aggressive. And I'm not hoping it turns out this way, but it looks like with their attitude, with their organizational skills, with their expertise, with their experience, they could make Trump win again. The Democratic Party is positioning itself as a bunch of college, and I don't mean to insult college students, but it lacks the sophistication it ought to have by now. But you let a guy who comes into your midst, stands on your stage and announces he's leaving when he wasn't in it to begin with. Y'all are joking. Rank amateurs, and at the wrong time, the wrongest time you could choose to be casual is now. And that's what you are. So I'm not going to look to you as a real party that understands real politics in real time. You're joking. And you will not have me joking along with you. That's what I want to tell you today. I'm not joking along with you. There's nothing funny. I don't see what's funny. But you look at the candidates who are running now, those who are left, and they need massive infusions of help and direction from the party. You're not up to it. You're not up to it. All right, so I will add to this the observation that the party is running scared. It is afraid to do what it has to do. And what it has to do is cut people loose. Cut them out. Tighten up your party. Get clear vision. Throw those who are dragging you down. Out. Out you go. I don't understand what is the unwillingness to whittle down the ranks to people who bring something to the party, not some who want something to the party, but who bring things to the party that the party needs. The party acts as if people of color don't exist. They're not even talking to us. They have no programs. They have no plans that make sense. They're retreading the same old, and presenting it as new. No, you're not new. This is not anything new, except in the sense that you're repeating your old game plans, and they cease to be relevant in this day and age, and you have nothing else going. I haven't heard Biden come up with a creative idea that he intends to enact, seriously intends to enact. I haven't heard any of the so-called leading candidates. I haven't heard what they have to say to the vast majority, even of their supporters. So all I'm saying is don't blame the people for your mistakes. And you're making them way too often right now when you can hardly afford to lose anybody in your ranks. And you therefore have to bear the responsibility of possibly causing the re-election of one of the worst administrations in modern times. It would be on your head. We'll take this break and come back to your thoughts right after this. interesting to lead stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're talking about that horrific performance that people are rushing to patch up and make it look good today. It was wretched on many levels. And they just keep rolling along like Old Man River. They just keep rolling along, expecting that people will be reluctant to criticize them. Nope, now is the time you have to do it, because they have a lot of improvements to make, and they're not doing it. The party just isn't responding, and it is out of touch with its historic base, historic political base. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's hear what you are thinking. Is the party on target? Is it ready to deliver victory come next year, 2020? Is it ready to do serious combat with Donald Trump, who, as atrocious as he is, nonetheless has maintained a faithful connection with his base? What are you thinking? At 888-874-4888. Ephraim Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. Good afternoon.
Hello.
How are you? And I hope everybody's doing okay.
Thank you. So, what are your thoughts?
I just wanted to say a few things. The more people that are in this race, the better it is for Biden to win with less votes. So, the more people that can keep in there till the primary, it benefits him, because it'll be spread out more, and he'll need less votes to win. I think that Tulsi Gabbard is staying in the race as far as she can go, well, hopefully all the way to the end. And if she loses in the primary, she has plans to run in the Green Party as their candidate, maybe with Andrew Yang. Bernie will go independent when he loses the primary and maybe team up with Elizabeth Warren. This is the way I see it. I don't know who Biden plans to have as his running mate. Hopefully it's not Hillary Clinton. But, this is a real game going on here. And we're the victims. And you're trying to make sense of it. It's really hard to make sense out of nonsense, don't you think?
Well, we can't be the victims if we warn them that we won't be victims. If we were to tell this party in no uncertain terms, we are not going for the okey-doke come 2020. And to mean it. But you see, you know, hindsight is, as I say, 2020, but this tells us we, too, have fallen down on the job. We have not been doing our work. We have not been organizing. We have not been putting plans or counter plans together. We are waiting until it is way too late to do anything, and then we talk about who didn't help us. Now, we can't come with that this year.
But you're going on the assumption that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are separate. They are giving their best effort to make that look clear to us by always being at odds. That's why they always set things up where one, the Democrats run the House, and the Republicans run the Congress, the Senate. And this way, they can always be at odds, and nothing gets done. And we just seem confused and ponder why aren't they working together once there's a president voted in?
But I'm not taking any of those things as assumptions. I reject all of that. I am saying that we, you and I and others, we have not taken in recent years, we have not taken our political futures seriously. We haven't done it. And we're looking for a party with a history of treachery, a history of betraying its own base, to somehow perform a miracle and be our friends and advocates again. That's not going to happen.
Yes, but at the same time, they're accomplishing what they are trying to put forward on us. And we're not aware of that. They're
getting what they want. Oh, we are aware. Of course we are aware. We just don't want to get off of our rusty dusties and do the work of protecting our turf. We want to see what they're going to do. Well, what are they going to do when you're not telling them what you want done? And what is the price that they will pay? They will have to pay a price.
Well, that's also that's also a construct on their side again, that they keep us busy.
But I don't want to talk about that. We should accept that this is par for the course. We shouldn't now discover this. This is something that had been established decades ago. How do we get beyond that point? We're stuck.
Yeah.
That's my problem with the whole thing. We talk and talk and talk, and we talk the problems out, and then nothing gets done.
We could have a nationwide strike. We don't buy certain things.
Don't ask me. These are the questions that should arise within a community. And that is where the attention needs to be. These people who represent these communities, what do they know of what their own communities are thinking? Nothing. They assume that they know, and they assume that they'd be left alone to know. Nothing is going to happen to them.
So we are responsible
for that.
All right. Aside from that, my point about Tulsi Gabbard maybe running for the Green Party. This way she'll be in a presidential election and get her, you know, get more notoriety. Do you think there's plans for that with her?
I don't know what she's planning, but I think that she needed to just get out of the race gracefully, considering what has happened so far.
Well, that's why
and
I'm making
the regroup. And really get into the business of community-based politics.
I understand that, Yatrice, but that's why I'm bringing up this point, that she possibly has this thing. Maybe it's already established with because we're not hearing anything from the Green Party right now. It's all Democratic Party, and they want to impeach Trump. And in the meantime, while they're trying to impeach Trump, they're going through this process of leading up to the primary. But for Tulsi Gabbard to still be in the race, even though she doesn't have a chance of winning the primary, it makes me think that she wants to stay in there, get publicity. You know, she's in these Q&A sessions, so she gets herself out there. At least she's making her points. She has some kind of a podium or whatever, a place
yes,
to state.
Yes, but nobody's
things.
Asking at what cost. She
what
does
cost?
Not have an endless supply of cash. She does not have so strong a base. She does not have a well-defined, and I really believe that she, compared to many others, she has a real feel for what it means to run for office. I get all of that, but that's not what how you win. You have to have like a military plan on how you're going to win. You got to have tactics. And you don't get it if you are constantly, coming in with very, very low numbers. That's not a good sign. It means that you'll be spending good energy, the little bit of cash you have, pursuing something that you're not going to benefit from. You have to do some serious thinking.
But the point I'm trying to make is if she can get herself enough attention and then bring that to the Green Party, then you can get the 5% needed to make another party. Instead of just having a Democratic and Republican party, we can have also a legitimate Green Party with somebody who has something to say that maybe they can get. Look, I believe back in the 80s, Nader got the 5%, but they told him he didn't. And how is he going to prove that he did if they're saying he didn't? This is
because
what I'm saying. They want to keep it a two-party system, which is really
tricks.
A one-party system, which is
Nader should have been smarter about how this game is played. And I'm not blaming him, because he made a valiant effort, and he did mobilize a very impressive base. But if you accept that for every inch you go forward, there is a system working hard to make you go 10 feet backward, you have to be prepared. You have to put together a scientific plan that would help you to prevail no matter what they do. But I appreciate your ideas. I think Tulsi Gabbard, I have said it many times, I think she's very sincere in what she wants to do. At the same time, I think she ought to face the reality of the situation. She's not going to win. Not now. Not with this way that they're operating. They're too loose.
But she knows that herself. She knows that already, Eutrice.
I'm not arguing about... I just see it differently. I see it differently. And I'm not arguing that she should win either.
Well, don't be surprised when it happens that she's going to be the candidate for presidency in the Green Party, and her running mate will be Andrew Yang. Don't be surprised when that happens, Eutrice, because that's
be
what
surprised.
I'm seeing ahead of time. You have to go to the future to figure out what's happening in the present. You can't deal with what's going on
Donald
now.
Nobody expected Donald Trump to win, and he's won, and he might win again. The question that we have to address is, what are we bringing in opposition to that? What is our opposition to Donald Trump?
That's what I'm saying. We're victims of the circumstance of what they're doing to us. David from Brooklyn wrote a book called The Game. It's all about what's taking place here. If you're going to ignore that, then we're just like we're walking around like idiots.
Just have to be calm and tactical in our actions. We have to have extraordinary appreciation for what we can and what we cannot do, what we have, what we do not have, and how to operate. What is the best way to operate with what we have in order to win? And what is winning? Is winning just being president? There are many things that we need to win at, and we need to define them and pursue them.
Right.
So I appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for calling in today. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to piggyback on what E said. I don't think E is wrong about the crowded field. It's a very common thing that gets done. As a matter of fact, you can actually pay people to run in the campaign. It's completely legal. It happened in the campaign when I ran against Melissa Mark Viverito. She paid a black minister to run, hoping that would peel off some of the black vote. She was very unpopular, so she only won by 30% of the vote, but that's the reason why she won is because she split it six ways. So two of the people were hired. Now, I don't think E is right about Biden. I do think that there's a possibility that the reason why there are so many candidates there might be because Hillary at the last minute could jump in. And even though she's not popular, if there was enough candidates there, she could peel off a win. That is, to me, much more possible and much more probable than the Biden thing. I also don't agree with you on you have to have a ton of money to enter the race or you have no value. I'm not sure if that's what meant to say.
But
that's...
mark me well. I did not say you have to have a ton of money.
Okay.
You have to have
okay.
some kind of money.
Okay. But there's also a value. There is a value to having people come in to the race regardless of their monetary situation, because like this woman Telsey, she will continue to put uncomfortable items on the table that others do not want to discuss. And although she will not win, these people that are people that look like they're going to win this candidacy, they'll have to address this. It does put more questions out there. I am of the school of, you know, more choices, more voices. I actually think that's a good thing. I don't agree that Telsey will get the Green Party. I don't think he knows how the Green Party works. I know that generally speaking, they don't pick up on Democratic candidates. You have to have come in from the very start on the green ticket. They're not just going to take you because you peeled off of the Democratic Party. Might happen because it's a presidential election, but I kind of doubt it. So I don't think that's going to happen. And the last thing I want to say is I don't think we're victims, and I think that there are some really good choices up there. I think there are better choices than we've had in a long time. I also think that it's really hopeful that the Democratic Party looks at least like they're allowing more progressive speakers to come up to the podium. And even if they're not welcome there, these people are pushing up. Bernie Sanders spoke this morning against the Palestinian, the occupation of Palestine and the occupation of their land. I think that was very bold because no one else on that podium spoke about that last night. And I'm saying not everything is perfect at all, but I think that we have some better choices. And I do want to say, and I really believe this, that I think that a Bernie candidacy could absolutely, absolutely take on Trump and absolutely win. Because when I listen to people that are Republican or leaning as independent, they are willing to go with a Bernie. But they would not go with a Hillary. They would not go with a Joe Biden. But they would go with a Bernie. And that's what I think we have to realize, is that you've got this huge section of independent voters. And this was the voter that carried him last time, not the Democrats. And that was one of the problems with the primary election, is they could not vote. They were carrying him with the money, but when it came time to go and vote in the primary, they could not vote in that primary. I'm not saying that it wasn't stolen from him. It certainly was. But what they were counting on is that he would get into the primary and all those independent voters would get behind him. Now, I think what happened in the campaign is they did not, without the choice of him there, that they went to Donald Trump rather than Hillary Clinton. So those people are still there. Those millennials are definitely lining up by the thousands to see Bernie. And I have to say, too, it is so refreshing for me to see somebody who people genuinely like, and lots of people cross the board like him. I'm so surprised that so many kids, young kids, really, really like him. And they genuinely like him. They genuinely believe that there is hope in the future. So
When we're out of time. So I would ask your indulgence, if you wish to continue it, and I hope you do, tomorrow is Free Your Mind Friday, and just call in early, and we'll finish up your discussion that you started today. I'm riveted by it.
Thank you, Yatrice. I love your show. Bye-bye.
It's our show. Our show. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. And we've been tackling some pretty important subjects, which require a lot more discussion. Let's meet up again tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.